Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paula Giordana, I'm excited about our next guest, Gretchen Elizabeth Carlson.
Not as excited as me, honey.
A broadcaster and author. She wrote two books, at least two books, Getting Real, back in 2015. The most recent, Be Fierce, Stop Harassment, and Take Your Power Back.
That's right.
Of course, she was Miss America back in 1989. She plays a mean violin, and I think she continues to this day to give me credit for really launching her career
in
the backyard at Care 11.
Many times. Right.
Hey, Gretchen, welcome to the show.
I've been sitting here on hold feeling like I'm back home in Minnesota. I'm listening to the weather report. I know and you know all the highways that you're talking about in the traffic report. And yes, Paul, I do credit everything that's happened in my life for the last 30 years from ever since I was in the backyard with you at Chester.
Oh, stop some more.
Well, we're going to isolate that and play that a lot, Gretchen. Yeah. It's never going to get old.
God bless you. Well, thanks for joining us today. And again, you have obviously, you're a hero of mine. The fact that you've done so well in your career and yet you've stood up and spoken truth to power. You largely brought down Roger Ailes at Fox News, the lawsuit against Mr. Ailes. You have been a brave, tireless defender of women and men. Who are caught up in sexual harassment claims. And I know that you have a documentary coming up on Monday, January 14th, on Lifetime. One of three separate documentaries. This is a two-hour documentary. Tell us about this, Gretchen, and what got you on this track?
Well, yeah, I mean, my life has always worked in mysterious ways. As you alluded to, you know, as a child, I was a really serious violinist. I thought that was what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And then when I gave that up for a short time, I thought I was going to be a lawyer. Then I ended up in television. And, you know, it's not like I planned on becoming known for harassment in the workplace by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, growing up in Minnesota with great values and a hard work ethic, the one constant in my life has been if there's a challenge in front of me that I go for it. And so I've been working really hard the last couple of years to try and right this very wrong in our society about harassment and how pervasive it is. So after the book Be Fierce, Lifetime came to me and they said, look, we'd like to do a production deal with you and get you back into television in your career that you love. And, you know, we'd love the first documentary to be about the every woman story. And it was just perfect for what I wanted to do, because really nobody's focusing that much on the every woman story. We hear a lot about well-known journalists and we hear a lot about famous Hollywood actresses, but what about the fast food worker? And what about the firefighter? And, you know, what about the police officer? And those were the women that I wanted to honor. And so I spent almost the whole summer traveling all across the country documenting these stories. And it's finally here. It's going to be Monday night. And, you know, the second part of it, we really try to find accountability for these women, too, by tracking down the companies and seeing how they're going to respond to the allegations. And, you know, this is how we make change.
Gretchen, it's Giordana here. Were you surprised at how pervasive and how long this has been going on? I understand your personal experience, but did every woman that you talked to, their story, did it still shock you even after what you've been through?
Not really, unfortunately, because, you know, right after I filed my suit in July of 2016, one of the most surprising things back then was how many women started reaching out to me. Mm-hmm. And that's when I knew that it was a pervasive epidemic. But that, you know, that was a shocking time for me then. And what was so sad was that the stories were also similar in the sense that the woman finally found the courage to come forward, went to complain, and then the majority of them were promptly demoted, blacklisted, and fired. And never had their careers ever again. And that was just alarming to me and so awful that we were taking away the passion and the careers of all these women for doing nothing wrong.
What's the learning here, Gretchen? I feel like this still goes on, though. You have a name and a voice and a face and an education. And the fact that you're shining the light on this is great. But I feel like for these women, it's still happening. Even if they come forward, you know, the cleaner who cleans at night, who may is being raped by her boss in the linen closet. You know, these women, the McDonald's worker, the things that you've focused on, even if they come forward, is it their reality that they're still marginalized and they never see justice?
Well, that's what I'm hoping to change with this documentary, because you bring up McDonald's. Three of the women that I feature were working, one of them still is, at McDonald's. And, you know, that's a huge corporation that nobody else has, quite honestly, had the guts to do a story on.
Mm-hmm.
These women are exclusively speaking to me, and you know, we went to McDonald's and looked for a response, and we do have a written response from them in the documentary, but not an interview. And you know, listen, this is really beholden on companies across America really ask themselves if they're being a good corporate citizen.
That's right.
And they can follow laws that are on the books, and they can do the minimum amount of work, but are they really doing what they can to make workplace safe for everyone? And that's really what I hope we get out of this documentary, and I hope that it will bring change and companies will become more introspective.
Gretchen, what can you say about your experience specifically at Fox News and what got you off the dime to say, essentially, enough is enough, I'm not going to take this, I'm going to push back? I mean, taking on Roger Ailes, arguably the most powerful man in television, that's non-trivial. And yet you were up to that challenge. What did you learn from that process, words of advice that you can give any woman out there or even a man who's being subjected to harassment right now, today?
Well, you know, it all harkens back to the way in which I was raised in Minnesota, to be honest with you. You know, I was a gutsy little girl, and some of that was innate, and some of that my parents taught me to always stand up for myself. And that stayed with me throughout my whole life. And, you know, this is not a decision that you make overnight one day. You know, this is something that I spent years debating and deliberating with my family about, and you know, it's not like a light switch that you just turn on. I would have to tell you that, and this is in the documentary, actually, we come back home to Anoka.
Do you?
And yeah, and we chat because we start with the emotional journey that I went through.
Right.
And we talk to my parents. It's very emotional. We talk to my best friend growing up in Anoka, Molly, who's still my best friend, and, you know, talk about how this whole case impacted the people that were close to me. But the bottom line for me and the advice that I would give is, you know, if you're a parent, raise your kids to always have a voice. Raise your boys to respect women. That is just essential in this whole discussion. We spend a lot of time talking about empowering girls, but the reality is, what I've learned is, it's really about our boys. And also, you know, aside from the way that you're raising your kids, for me, it was just so important to know that I had my parents behind me. And no matter how old you are, you always want your parents' approval.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just blessed to still have them in my life today. And they were my rock and foundation and one of the prevailing reasons why I finally decided to say, I'm going to do this. You know, the final nail in the coffin, Paul, was really that my 27-year career that I had killed myself for was taken away from me, and it wasn't my choice. And I decided, if I don't do this and speak up for all of these women, who will? And so I jumped.
We put so much onus, Gretchen, on the victim, on coming forward, on finding the strength, on having the support, on speaking out. But the power structure here is really at fault, you know, 100%. The victim is never at fault. The power structure is people in power that don't care. The Les Moonveses, the Harvey Weinsteins, the Roger Ailes of the world. Have you seen any kind of shift since your story and the Me Too movement? Have you seen any positive shift in this kind of power structure?
Yes. And, you know, I actually call what we're experiencing now a cultural revolution. And we all know that societal changes, especially relating to cultural issues, don't happen fast.
Yeah.
So the idea that I can tell you today that we've seen great strides in just 2 years' time is quite amazing, actually. A lot of that has to do with social media. As much as I hate it for my teenage kids, I think that it's been remarkable in allowing women and men to be able to come forward either anonymously or putting their name and face on their issues. And I think also a huge part of this has been the American public being interested in these stories, because I think the American public was outraged to hear that this was still going on in the 21st century. Now, one of the reasons they didn't know is because we keep this issue secret. You know, even for me, I signed a settlement document, and so I can't tell you all the nitty-gritty details, although my lawyers were crafty and strategical, and they got it out into the public eye so that you can go and look at my complaint online if you want to.
Really?
But the other way that we keep this secret is that we have arbitration clauses in employment contracts, and that's been very successful for companies over the last two decades to keep these issues silent. So that is something that we've made great strides on. I introduced legislation on the Hill last year, bipartisan, imagine that.
Hmm.
And, you know, we're trying to get these arbitration clauses at least eradicated for sexual harassment claims. And some companies have decided to do this now on their own without being pushed by federal legislation. Microsoft was the first company, followed by Google and Facebook and Airbnb and eBay and Uber and Lyft. So there's sort of this domino effect right now, at least in the technology world, that companies are, you know, being woke and deciding maybe we should be better corporate citizens for our employees. And I'm hoping that that trend will continue.
Gretchen, what would you say to some of the naysayers out there who say, look, men have always acted inappropriately? I mean, go back to Adam and Eve, right? I mean, now, since then, of course, you want to think that we've evolved, but it seems to me that there's still a certain percentage of mostly men who say, look, boys will be boys, and this happens, and this has always happened. It's always going to happen. Is this about power? Is it about sex? What is the pathology? Why do guys still feel like they can try to get away with this?
I know. I wish along my journey in my life, Paul, I would have also become a psychiatrist. Because
yeah.
I get asked that question, you know, numerous times a week. So I don't know from a psychological point of view, but I can share with you that what I've learned is that this issue truly, really is about power. It rarely is about the sex. It's about feeling like you're dominant over somebody and being able to, you know, hold their career in the palm of your hand.
Mm.
And there's some fascination, I guess, to maybe their own insecurities that men feel the need to be to do that. But you said something interesting. You said boys will be boys. And actually, I say this in my book, and I say this when I go speak on college campuses. The more that we promulgate that little line, the more disservice we actually do to our young men, because we're actually saying to them that it's okay to be aggressive and that it's okay to hurt women. And actually, what we should be saying is that to be a real man is to stand up, and to man up is to stand up for women. And that's what I've been telling young people across the country, to try and change the way our culture and society is rearing our boys. It's really essential that, you know, we don't say girls will be girls. Mm-hmm. And so when you really stop and look at it, you know, we do a great job of empowering girls, but we really, really need to be focusing on getting our boys to respect women.
Does that come from parents? Does it come from schools?
Yeah.
Does it come from peer
schools,
groups?
Everything.
I mean, all of the above,
it comes,
right?
It comes from everything. It's really interesting because one all-boys school had the guts to bring me in to speak, and so far there's only been one school, and that tells you something. So we need to be awakened on that whole approach. But I have to tell you, I really am never nervous to do much of anything, but I was nervous that day because I had to alter what I was going to say, and I wondered what the reception would be. And you could hear a pin drop. And then I thought, oh, well, they're not going to ask me any questions. And they asked me so many questions that we had to actually cut it off because they had to go back to class. But the best part was that the advisors kept emailing me even a week or two later saying, we're still talking about this. And that is what, you know, that's when I know that what I'm doing is making a difference. But I should be doing more of that. There should be more brave boy schools out there, you know, that want to hear this and want to improve culture for our young men moving forward.
Gretchen, can you give us an example of some of the things that the boys were asking that maybe surprised you, or you were thinking, really, you guys don't know how to do this, that came up during your speech there?
No, I think, you know, a lot of the questions were things that I've heard since now, like fear about how they should react in relationships or on dates or when they actually get into the workplace. And, you know, the truth is that even young men know what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. I mean, we basically all know that. So mm-hmm. It's kind of a cop-out to go down the path of, you know, well, men just don't know how to react around women anymore, and maybe they shouldn't go on dinner business things and that type of thing. It's kind of a cop-out because in reality, we all know what's right and what's wrong. And I'm not talking about cases where a guy says something like, I like your hair or I like your dress. I mean, people aren't suing over that. Mm-hmm. The cases that I've heard and all the thousands of women who've reached out to me and these women that are in my documentary Monday night, these cases and allegations are so egregious that you can't believe that this is still happening in 2019. So, I mean, not to be crass, but one woman who reached out to me recently asked for a promotion in 2017, and the boss told her to get up on the desk and spread them. Mm.
2017. Every man knows that that is not okay. My 13-year-old son knows that's not okay.
That's what I'm saying. My 13-year-old knows that's not okay. So, you know, so that I just want to make that point, not to be crass, but to showcase that most of these stories are so over the top that there's not really any gray area.
Yeah.
You're getting some love on the text line, as I knew you would. Amen, Gretchen. I'm a father of four boys. My goal is to teach them that a real man respects and serves women. A real man serves his wife.
I wish I could say hello to that person, but thank you so much for sending that in. We need more men like you. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, that I'm so glad that came up, actually, because women cannot shoulder the responsibility of fixing this by ourselves.
We can't fix men. It. We need that's we it. The power it. Structure needs that's, to be changed. They have to modify their behavior. And while we can't force other people to change, they need to make that choice to change the men in power that do this to make it better for their daughters, for their sisters, for their sons.
Right. It's so true, Jordana. And you know, the way in which they can start doing that is to hire more women, pay
that's
us
right.
fairly. Put us in the boardroom, give mm-hmm. us the promotions we deserve. Because guess what goes away when you have more women in power?
Yeah, these right. abuses of women underneath you, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's part of the equation. And I just want to make sure that I say that the majority of men want safe work environments
yes.
for women.
Yes.
You know, it's not their goal to go out and be jerks.
Of course.
So it's unfortunately the minority of the people that we can change and get rid of.
But we have seen, Gretchen, I mean, these powerful men. I mean, these Les Moonveses, these Roger Ailes, these Harvey Weinsteins. I mean, boy, they have really made a bad name for themselves.
Yeah, they'll never get their names yeah. back.
I mean,
their reputations back.
That's the understatement of the century.
Yeah.
Gretchen,
yeah.
One of our listeners asked, did you ever work at a Target in Coon Rapids?
No, I wish I did, though.
It seemed random enough that maybe, all right.
And because I was there quite frequently, because it was near my house, and I have to say, I still love Target. They don't have them on the East Coast as much as they have them in the Midwest, and so I have to tell you that that's like on my bucket list every time I come home.
And they're not as nice on the East Coast.
Giving me an endorsement right now, but I love going there, and I've actually bribed my kids into being Target lovers as well. So. Nope, didn't work there, but would have liked to.
And I know I went to my dentist today, Frank Mork, in lovely Richfield.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, yep, my father was on the same golf team as your father, and you guys apparently went to the state champions,
state championship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they won it 2 years in a row.
Wow.
That is such a small world. And actually, he just lost his mom. So if he happens to be listening, my heart goes out to him. Very close friends of my parents. So small world. I'll tell you, Paul, and I'm sure this happens to you too, Jordana. Every single day of my life, there is some Minnesota connection or some other connection in my life, and it really comes down to being one degree of separation in my mind. And especially on this issue, to be honest with you, I've heard from so many people that I never thought I'd ever hear from ever again in my life who have shared their stories with me, and they just want to reach back out and say, you know, this happened to me too. So while it's sad and while we need to fix it, it's also a way to connect back with people.
Well, you can come back anytime, but I'm thrilled, A, to have a chance to get you on CCO Radio, and really looking forward to this documentary. Again, it's Gretchen Carlson, Breaking the Silence, a 2-hour documentary on Lifetime, Monday, January 14th. Is that 8 o'clock Central or 8 o'clock Eastern? Do you know, Gretchen?
It's 8 o'clock Eastern, so in Minnesota it is
7 o'clock
Central yep. time.
All right, Monday. Yeah. Circle your calendar. That's one you do not want to miss. We appreciate the amazing work you're doing. Keep it up. Keep fighting. And don't be a stranger.
I won't. I really appreciate speaking to both of you. I love Minnesota and appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Gretchen.
We love you right
keep
back.
Fighting the good fight, girlfriend.
Thanks, Gretchen.
Thank you.
Oh, it's also 5:30. She's doing good work out there. Yep. We really appreciate it. We need more women fighting
she
the fight.
She is a force
shining
of nature.
The light. We need to make it happen. Sears. Sears got an 11th hour stay of execution. So are brick and mortar stays numbered? Are their days numbered? Is this the end of stores like this? And why do you go to stores? Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with Sears when we get back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
She's pretty great.
Who's that? Oh, Gretchen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, she is amazing. I really admire what she is doing. Using her stature, using her bully pulpit mm-hmm. to get the word out and say, no, this is not okay.
And should have asked her if she shopped at Sears, because that's what we're talking about in our next segment. I'm curious to know if
that would have floored her. That would have stopped her in her tracks.
Apparently you didn't, because Sears was facing bankruptcy.
No, I shopped at Sears not lately, but I had.
30 years ago, maybe.
Well, yeah, even 15, 20 years ago. Kenmore Appliances, the Craftsman stuff. Yeah, I mean, they had some good stuff.
Well, they didn't have enough good stuff because they were facing bankruptcy. So their former CEO, instead of face liquidation, found $4.4
billion. In the seat cushions? How do you just find
In his hedge fund.
Jeez.
Okay, Edward Lampert,
wow.
Hedge fund guy, raised his bid and Sears accepted and $4.4 billion. And now he gets to own all of the Sears and Kmart properties. What he does with them, something we talked about at 3:35. I say maybe a WeWork. People say maybe some apartments. Paul says maybe a luxury Lifetime Fitness that functions as a spa. All good options. Lots of good real estate. But he's got to do something that's not Sears, because Sears was dying. And you weren't shopping. I wasn't shopping. The listeners weren't shopping. So is brick and mortar dead? Is this the beginning of the end?
I don't think brick and mortar is dead, but it requires infusions of capital. It requires reinvention. It requires reimagining what a brick and mortar experience is like. Mm-hmm. I buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, but I still like going to a store, try on a sport coat, mm-hmm. try on some jeans. Yeah, I hate having to send stuff back and forth. People
right.
say, well, yeah, you can do it. And if it doesn't fit, you send it back. And then you got the ping pong back and forth. Some people might like that. I think it's a pain in the butt. I'd rather go to the mall, go to a store, go to one of the outlets, try on the jeans. If it's a TV set, I'd rather go to Best Buy and see the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can only get so much on your iPad or on your computer screen. There's something to be said, the experience of going and seeing and touching something, trying it out, sampling it, playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's always going to be an opportunity for that, for smart retailers to combine the online experience, which Target and even Walmart have done well, with the in-store experience.
Well,
there's a place for both.
How do you mean how they've combined it? I don't understand how
coupons,
the online...
Coupons on your phone.
I see.
But come into the store.
Yes. Okay.
So...
That makes sense.
And even with specific apps, they know if you're in a store and you can get specific coupons, discounts. So still incentivize people to come into the store, but tie it into the online experience.
I don't know where we got this idea, because obviously it's not mine, that people hate shopping. I guess a lot of people hate shopping. One of my greatest pleasures is shopping.
But women are different
no,
than men.
I like
when it comes
walking around
shopping.
Costco. I like walking around
you
the
like
grocery
browsing.
Store. I like walking around the grocery store. I like seeing the different colors of the peppers. I like seeing all of the different options of peanut butter that I can buy. I like having options and choices. And maybe there's something on sale that I will purchase that's different at the grocery store. Or it will inspire something to make for dinner. I like going to stores. I don't think it's inconvenient. I like being in control of making my purchases, picking out the produce, having it in my home in 5 minutes as I drive it back to my house. I understand maybe this takes time, but what else are we doing other than things like going to the grocery store or trying on shoes when you need new shoes? I mean, this is life.
That's as may be, but there's clearly a reason that stores like Sears are going, you know, and Kmart and stores like that are going out of business, and Amazon's worth $18 kajillion, right? Because regardless of whether people like the shopping experience or not, mm-hmm. there's clearly via the evidence, a lot of people that like being able to sit on your couch and hit a button and have Amazon fly a drone to your house in 2 hours. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but you get what I'm saying. So, you know, my point is, if Amazon can perfect, or any online retailer can perfect that delivery same day within an hour or two, then brick and mortar stores are in big trouble. And they got to figure out a way to make that experience unique enough that it's worth getting off the couch, getting in the car, and driving to the store to have that experience. That, I mean, I understand your point of shopping, and there will always be smaller boutique niche stores.
Yes.
But the big store that carries everything, you know, we're carrying that around in our pockets. You don't need to go to the store to do that anymore.
But if let's take this example further. What about fine dining? I mean, if Amazon teams up with what is it? Not
HelloFresh.
HelloFresh. Some of these other companies that deliver meals, and they can deliver a 3-course meal. Are people still going to go out to restaurants? I hope so.
I am.
Because there's the entertainment value, the getting away value. Get the heck out of the house.
I get that from shopping, too, though. I feel like it's therapy for me to be out amongst the things, out amongst the options.
I would rather gouge out my right eye with a soup spoon than browse through a shopping mall. Guys are hunters, right? We see what we want, and we go, we shoot it, we drag it back to our house. The whole notion of browsing. Most guys, I'm talking about myself and my friends.
Yeah, handsome husband is not. He's Amazon guy all the way. Yeah.
But I still think there's a place for both. But the problem with Sears, they didn't reinvent. They did not refresh their inventory. They didn't make the experience of going into a store fun. Like it is
like a Target.
That's Target,
right. Or Costco,
right?
Even.
Yes,
it's fun
absolutely.
To go to Costco and see everything. So I think that's where it has to be more experiential if you're going to survive. Not only multimedia, not only online, in-store, experiential. There have to be, I don't know, it's the samples. What gets us into Costco? The samples, the giant amounts. I'm not sure what it is about Costco.
I need a 6-year supply of toilet paper.
That, too.
I just,
okay?
Having
that
seems
to run out every month.
Your grandparents did.
Makes
so.
Me comfortable after growing up with a Sears catalog. Yeah, thank you.
Mark's in South St. Paul. Hey, Mark, jump in here.
What about the social experience? Going out, meeting people, seeing things.
Right.
How many of the shopping centers used to have various craft fairs and other things like that? Remember back in the 80s, the mall rats.
Yep.
Kids would go there to meet up with other kids. Socialize with people, see things, actually talk with people in person. I do online shopping, browsing in some cases, find out what's available here and there. But I want it in hand. I actually see it, feel the quality and so forth.
Yep.
But I know it's there.
Because I might not like it then.
Yeah,
you know?
But I'm missing online. I'm missing the interaction, being with people, talking with them face to face, not just a quick blurb or tweet, as I like to call it, whole sentences, discussions.
But Mark, you got your 272 Facebook friends. Doesn't that make you happy?
It. No, the point is, Mark, you should be heartened to know that this still happens. It's just I'm watching it happen to younger generation differently. Like, my kids like to shop on Amazon. They don't necessarily need to browse, even like clothes shopping. They don't want to go clothes shopping with me even then when they need to. But here's what they do, Mark. They go to coffee shops. They hang out at the Starbucks. They go meet at the Jamba Juice. It's like more experiential. They'll go for a little nosh, you know, at the Caribou. And that's their social. They still go to the mall, by the way, Mark. They do still go to the mall. And like, I have a 15-year-old girl. They live there. You know, they wander around. And they don't have a lot of money, so it's not like they're buying a lot of stuff. But they do hang out.
They're checking out the dudes.
I know. Yeah, stop it. Really?
They're socializing.
They're
learning to actually interact with real people, not the synthetic world of the internet, to actually go see people, because you see so much more by not just the words, but how they're said, the facial expression, how they hold the bodies. That's interaction that you don't get online.
Well, at least, Mark, that you make a good point.
I agree with you, Mark.
I know the girls are doing it. My son is playing a lot of Fortnite I'll tell you that. And I know he's on with his friends, but there's a lot of Fortnite happening, and that only happens when you're alone in your bedroom or wherever the Fortnite is. And the girls may be out at the mall, but when you're a 13-year-old boy, there's a lot of Fortnite. I'm a little worried about that one.
Mark brings up a good point, that social connectivity,
yeah,
that social fabric, getting out, meeting people, hanging out with people face-to-face. Screen time is not going to replace and shouldn't replace, can't replace face-to-face. We need more of that.
Okay, but you know, that's not Sears' problem, right?
I mean, no,
that isn't the business's problem.
In a way,
they're not
is.
Here. No, they don't exist to create social opportunities for people. That's up for people to do that, right? They're in business to make money, and their concern is that people are sitting at home clicking on their screens, buying stuff at Amazon because they find that more convenient or more efficient or whatever it is, or they think they're saving money, whatever they're thinking. And these stores have to figure out a way to get people to come into the, you know, to give up that convenience or give up whatever people want to be clicking on their phones for, instead of coming into their store, or their stores are going to die.
Mm-hmm. And they did. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Sears died. They didn't evolve. They didn't change. Their floors were dirty. Whatever was happening there, they didn't evolve. It's not going to be Sears from now on. It has to be something different. You don't put $4.4 billion to reinvent Sears. That would be suicide.
I'm happy to buy something on Amazon that I've bought in the past.
Right.
I know what it is, the packaging. I had a good experience, so I'll do that again. But in terms of discovery, curation, finding new things, testing new things out, there's still a role for hands-on.
But there has to be some sort of nuance to that, right?
Right.
Because if that was all it was, these stores wouldn't be going out of business, or they wouldn't be struggling financially.
But I don't want to feel dirty when I walk into a store.
And nor should you feel dirty. It's not a criticism of you, Paul. We're saying that the store has to do something differently because the reality is, you know, whatever your experience is, fine. But the reality is that the numbers are trending the wrong way.
That's right.
For a place like Sears, mm-hmm. right? They didn't adapt. They didn't evolve. They just tried to do the same thing that they had always done. And meanwhile, Amazon built a better mousetrap and put them out of business. So the worry is that if you're a brick and mortar store and Amazon, like I said, if Amazon figures out how to fly a drone to your house with your package within an hour of you ordering something, mm-hmm. these stores are going to be in a lot of trouble.
But you know what's ironic? Amazon started with books, and I was mm-hmm. back on Amazon buying books in 1996 when they started. I was one of the first. I once talked to a humanoid in Seattle at Amazon. They looked up my account and they whistled. They go, "Whoa, you were one of the early ones."
Wow, good for you.
So they started with books, and then they put many bookstores out of business. Okay. And so what's happening now? You can actually go into Amazon bookstores. They started their own bookstores.
Did they really?
So you
brick
can go in.
Bookstores?
They have brick and mortar bookstores. So they've kind of come full circle. And again, coming from Amazon, there's a place for brick and mortar, but you have to do it right. You have to invest the money.
Yeah.
You have to make it an experience, an adventure.
We're going to experience traffic right now at 5:49 Wixon Jewelers Time Check. If you haven't been to Wixon before, you don't know what you're missing. Stop by today, brick and mortar, and experience the Wixon difference. Fun show. We had a lot today. We started with Roni Levy, former advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, talking about the wall,
in
Israel.
And he basically said, yeah, build the wall, but it's just one thing. Right. It's a little simplistic just to build the wall.
Right.
There should be other things taken into account.
Right. A little bit of everything. We talked about Sears, what it should be, why its downfall happened. Talked about debt. Millennials today, 1 in 5 millennials say they will die never paying off their debt.
And Gretchen was amazing.
Loved Your Solutions. Yeah, and of course, Gretchen Carlson in our 5 o'clock hour. She was fantastic, and she's fighting the good fight,
shining the light on injustice. She's a very, very brave person.
And we remind folks that anybody driving home right now that if you missed the topics in the 3 or the 4 o'clock hour, you can always go to WCCORadio.com, click on podcasts, and get everything you need there.
And thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Got to get the plug in.
Well done.
I love it. Also, a reminder that 20 years ago today, The Sopranos hit the airwaves. You saw it the first time around, and you're rewatching?
I went back to episode 1 the other night, and Lori, my wife, stormed out of the family room.
Why?
It just hits a nerve. She grew up in New Jersey.
Oh, right. Well,
and I think it reminds her of home.
The opening credits is Livingston, New Jersey. That was the town
is
right
that
next
Livingston?
To me. Yeah, they were fancier houses there. It was not my town. It was fancier houses in Livingston where I guess Tony is supposed to have his house. And it's New Jersey. It absolutely 1,000% is New Jersey.
But those shots of the Meadowlands,
yes,
and the New Jersey Turnpike,
real.
And it's the nasty part of New Jersey. Right. Much of New Jersey is very pretty. You get away from the New Jersey Turnpike. It's hilly. It's wooded. It's nice. No, but
it's okay.
Anyway, it struck a nerve with Lori. Yeah. But I'm still fascinated by the pathology, and you find yourself, after a time, rooting for Tony Soprano.
Oh, yes.
Even though he is an evil person, and yet he's got this other side. He's the family guy. He's got a daughter and a son, and he shows up at their ball games, and he wants to be a good husband. And you see the struggle in his mind. And somebody pointed out, I think it was Chad, we were talking about this earlier today. Same thing with Don Draper, Mad Men. You know,
I think
you
he was less likable than Tony Soprano. Tony, you kind of wanted to give a hug at some point when he was done murdering people. But Don Draper, he was a dog.
Yeah, but he didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
Tony, I mean, we watched Tony murder people. I mean,
right.
This is what the show does to me. I feel a kinship with Tony, and yet Don Draper was just a cheat.
Yeah, all
and
he did
dog.
Was cheat on his wife, which is bad. I mean, I'm not giving him a pass on that. That's bad, but it's not killing people.
Yeah,
or ordering the deaths of people.
I feel like I have to shower after.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us, and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.